You hear me, Robert?
I got you now. I was just kissing
I
him like that. The computer speakers trying to work out what was going on.
How's things?
Good, good. How are you?
Morning time for you, I assume, is it?
Yeah, Thursday morning, 8 o'clock.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good, man. All going well with your lifting? Look good.
Yeah, really good. Good. Probably the final home stretch for the next 10 days or so on the body composition phase. Just trying to get down to 90 kilos, which would be about 20 kilos lower than I started with Andrew. So really just pushing hard for a bit of this last little cut and then get back into a little bit more of a balanced and
I mean,
start a bit of strength again.
you look lean as hell.
Look, it's one of those things, like the back's looking good and the stomach, there's always more to drop on the stomach.
Yeah, it tends to be that last little spot, right? But still, man, 20 kilos is a huge win.
Feeling good.
George, boy, what's going on?
There we go. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. Morning for you as well. Of course it is.
It's like 9 degrees in Sydney,
Cold.
cracking
Hey,
into
minus.
winter.
It's -4 here in Canberra.
Yeah.
I got my morning cardio in before this, and it was the Bureau of Meteorology told me it was feels like -6.5. I was like, yeah, it's frosty.
Fucking hell. You boys aren't used to that kind of weather, I assume.
No. You are. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thank you. We actually haven't, well, it was a 24, 25 degrees today for us. Proper summer weather for the UK.
Nice. Yeah, for the next 8 days.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
We had our hottest May of all time just gone. Yeah.
Wow.
It was
Move, moving the numbers.
24 degrees, that's about when people call it it's like getting heat stroke in the UK, isn't it?
Oh, the country falls apart. Genuinely, people start phoning in sick to work. Like no one shows up. Everyone's just drunk in the local parks. Yeah, it's wild. It's a wild time. Anybody? Have you guys got, except for yours, obviously, Robert, hitting like 20 kilo weight loss, which is wicked. Any other wins that you guys want to share?
Where are your shoes?
I've been back to deads and squats recently as well. So because of the bulge disc in my back, I steered clear of that, and I've really enjoyed the coaching calls. Chris has done, a couple of those sessions on his technique, and I've started to reincorporate
Are
a bit of, trap deads, normal deads, Romanian deads, front squats, back squats, different variations, trap bar, yoke, a whole bunch with Andrew. And it's just been really, the weight's not crazy, but it's just been good to build that confidence again that I can do it and my back isn't going to seize up.
It's great news. I remember talking about to you. That was fucking hell. That's nearly, it's not far off a year ago when we spoke originally, Rob. And I remember that was one of your biggest fears was around like back health and stuff like that. It's great when you can get back into those compound movements after a long time.
Yeah, I was yo-yoing back then. I was probably yo-yoing probably like every 6 weeks. I'd have a blowout that would set me back for a couple of weeks. I'd flare up, be like a turtle on my back, and have to rest completely for a few weeks. And it's just depressing. Every 4 to 6 weeks, you'd get into the hum of things, and then bang, you're out. So I think now it's about 7 and a bit months that I've been working with Andrew, just to be able to do that consistently with no major injuries and no back flare-ups has been awesome.
That's great, man. That's really good news. Just give everyone else a couple more minutes, see if we have any stragglers, and then we'll get going. So, difficult, slightly more difficult in terms of titles that I was given today in regards to micronutrition and muscle building. A lot of the time you'd look at something like micronutrition more based around health. Now, not to say it doesn't play a role in muscle growth, because as we know, a healthy body is more inclined to lay down muscle tissue anyway. When we look at stuff like if we see people with nutrient deficiencies, we tend to see quote unquote illness a little bit more within those clients. So sometimes getting them back up to a proper nutrient status can lead to greater output. But when I started to look into the research in terms of muscle growth, there's quite a bit out there in terms of nutrient deficiency, and poor ability to put on muscle. So there is stuff out there that's definitely worth noting. And when we look at something like micronutrition, the way to differentiate something like micronutrition from something like macronutrition, we always like, I mean, the discussion that we always tend to have is based around carbohydrates, protein, and fat, right? And they, at a very base level, are energy substrates. So they are things that we can use in order to produce energy. And whether it's micronutrition, as I'll touch on in a minute, tends to be more so based around function. So the function of the cell, the function of the enzymes that produce energy. Because I think it's always important for you guys to know that when we eat, let's use carbs and fats in particular, because carbs and fats will be the dominant ones. Carbs and fats, when we use those for energy, they're not direct energy. We need to break them down through all these complex biochemical processes. But those processes, I like to think of it like going into a casino. When you guys go to a casino, you can't trade money directly to play. You have to take your money, which in this situation, you think of your carbs and fats, you bring it to the casino and you trade it in for chips to play. And that's our ability to be able to produce energy effectively. So when we think about the energy currency of the body, it's not carbs and fats, it's ATP. So we use carbs and fats, we bring it down this process, and eventually the body, through after all of this, creates something called ATP. So when we consider what micronutrition does and how it can affect muscle growth, we have to know that energy dictates everything. So our ability to be able to produce energy effectively will determine our ability to be able to do everything. So whether that's output in the gym, whether that's the energy available to grow muscle at the end of it. So let's go through a little bit. Now, come in and out of this presentation because it can get a little bit stuffy, I guess is the right way to put it, with something like this, without going into too many biochemical processes and things like that. We'll try and keep it relatively light. So what we're generally going to try and look at here is kind of how do micronutrients play a role within the cell. So, like I mentioned before, it's important that we know the difference between something like a macronutrient and something like a micronutrient. Macronutrients are protein, carbs, and fats. And it's important to understand that they are the essential building blocks for muscle growth and energy production, but they don't actually do it by themselves. They need these micronutrients to run all the enzymes of our body so that we can effectively produce muscle or produce energy or whatever it may be. We can talk about what nutrients are essential. We'll talk about how we can test. We'll talk about some of the genetic factors and all these things that can play into our nutrient status. But sometimes we're very quick, and I am, as a nutritionist with clients, just to supplement people. But I think there's definitely a point to be made for a food-first approach. The difficulty can be, and I'm going to note this for any of you guys, particularly in a deficit, that rotation of foods isn't always the right thing to do. So what I mean by that is, like, we'll always think, like, you'll hear a presentation like this and you'll think, okay, Greg says I have to rotate all my meats, I have to rotate all my vegetables and my oils so that I get this perfect blend of micronutrition. A lot of the time, though, when you're trying to drop body fat, it's finding a routine and a pattern that looks really similar every single day. And that normally that doesn't involve too much food rotation. So for a lot of you guys, it's when you have maintenance calories or surplus calories that you can start to play around with combinations of foods in order to hit the right micronutrition. So it can be a slightly bit more complex, when we try to look at food. This is the way I like to think of it. Macronutrition, protein, carbs, and fats are like energy sources. Micronutrients are the language of the cell. It's how we actually speak to it and tell it how we want it to function. That doesn't happen for macronutrients. Macronutrients is very much just an amount. And it's a feedback. So, like if we take in too many carbohydrates all at once, or we're not burning them effectively, the cell will say, I don't want any more. Similar for fat. If we eat a bunch of fat all at once, it'll take some of it and availability to create energy with. The rest of it will just store as body fat. Whereas when we give the body adequate nutrients, so micronutrients, and when I say micronutrients, I'm talking vitamins and minerals, then we can tell the cell how we want it to function. But I think it's important to note macros with muscle growth. I just want to emphasize this at the start. Macros come first in regards to muscle growth. So like when you see people, they'll come and they'll be like, oh, you know, I just want to make sure I get the right blend of B vitamins for my muscle growth, or I want to use this supplement or that supplement, but they're not even getting adequate protein intake. They're not even getting adequate caloric intake, and they're trying to jump up the pyramid a little bit too quickly. So I know for a lot of you guys, that's going to be like basic knowledge, but calories and macronutrients will determine energy availability and how we'll build muscle or lose body fat. Then we start creeping up into stuff like micronutrition based around like health. But we must not neglect the building blocks first, because with calories, we get macronutrients. With macronutrients, we get micronutrients, and so on. If we just take multivitamin just to get all our micronutrition, we don't necessarily get adequate macronutrition or adequate calories. So as we look into micronutrition or the vitamin and mineral status of the body, we have to understand that the other things for muscle growth come first. Just want to make that clear before we move on. Now, you don't need to understand any of this. But this is how we produce energy. This is how we spike mTOR. mTOR is our mammalian target of rapamycin. I think the name's changed slightly. But that is how we actually signal to the body to grow, right? And these are the biochemical pathways that everything tends to go around. But when you look at all of this and look at every single cycle, look at every single enzyme. They all need certain micronutrients to work effectively. So if we want to use amino acids for fuel, we need B6, B9, B12. If we want to use carbohydrates for fuel, we need B2, B3, and magnesium. If we want to stabilize ATP, we need magnesium. If we want to create creatine, we need magnesium. If we want to contract the muscle, we need calcium, potassium, magnesium. So you can see that all of this stuff needs micronutrition for it to work effectively. And if any of these enzymes is particularly deficient in any of these one micronutrients, they don't work well. And when stuff like this gets, then we find backups in the chain. So micronutrition in muscle energy and growth pathways, as seen here, is obviously a really nutrient dependent pathway. So it can't be ignored. And we see it even at the top for mTOR activation, we need vitamin D and zinc. So like the type of nutrient that we need tends to vary greatly. So when you hear people say, like, if it fits your macros, that's all you need to do. So just hit your macros. That's fine if that's all you can handle at a certain phase in your dieting or your muscle growth. But we can see that if we don't produce energy, we do not effectively build muscle. That's enough biochemistry for you guys. But one of the massive things that you see all the time, is that B vitamins play such a massive role in energy production, therefore muscle growth. And you can see at the top, like B vitamins are responsible for protein metabolism, red blood cell synthesis, so that we can get oxygen to the cell, and methylation. I did want to ask you guys a question because we see it so commonly spoken out there now in the ether. How many of you guys know what methylation is or have heard about the phrase being spoken about?
I've heard of it, and when we spoke, Greg, you got me onto a methylated B vitamin instead of the normal one that I was on, and I vaguely get the concept of it, sort of like a stage of like breaking down or something, the B vitamin, maybe making it more available, but I don't really understand any more than that.
So like you'll see, like Gary Breck has become very famous for spouting about methylation these days, and this is more so based around like health stuff, more so than directly for muscle growth, which does play a little bit of a role in muscle growth. But methylation is basically our body's ability to be able to produce methyl groups. It's just a carbon and three hydrogens, or a hydrogen and three carbons, carbon and three hydrogens. But what it does is methyl groups get passed around the body to play all these different processes. So we need methylation for nitric oxide, so to regulate blood pressure. We need it to create serotonin. We need it to create dopamine. We need it to break down histamine and all sorts of different things. But it's so dependent on B vitamins, and there's so many genetic SNPs in something like methylation that it plays a big role in mental health, the ability to be able to methylate correctly. And I know this is going slightly off what we're actually discussing today, but you do find that people who have B vitamin deficiencies don't work that pathway particularly well, or if they have a lot of genetic SNPs, they don't work that pathway particularly well. And you find out that they get like dysregulated blood pressure and all these different things. And it is super micronutrient dependent. So like if you don't have enough folate, B12, choline, B6, riboflavin, all these things, that pathway doesn't work effectively. So the quality of our food and I don't like to use the word the cleanness, but the whole food that we eat will determine if we have enough of that food type. So it's just worth noting as we go through some of this. Now, let's get back to the presentation. Away. So when we look at some of the things that, like some of the foods more so, that are needed to in order to get adequate amounts of all these different B vitamins, you'll tend to see a lot of the same stuff, like pork, sunflower seeds for vitamin B1, for thiamine, which plays a big role in energy production. Like who, and I'm responsible for this, even though I create loads of meal plans, I always tend to just more, concentrate more on the macronutrient side of things initially. But how many of you guys like eat sunflower seeds, for example? And then if you get down to like B9, which is folate, how many of you eat a lot of leafy greens and lentils, for example? They don't always fit well into a muscle building program per se, and they tend to be often neglected. Like even if you start to look at B12, most of us guys aren't deficient in B12 as long as we eat enough meat. But how many of you guys eat organ meat anymore? We all eat the flesh, right? Does anybody here chuck it in the chat? Does anybody here actually eat organ meat? Asian family, so hot pot night equals organs. Yeah, man, like I remember my dad used to cook like sheep's hearts, and yeah, I think he used to eat, was it cow's brain or sheep brain that he used to eat? He would eat all the innards of an animal. And it's something that's often neglected now in society is organ meat. But in terms of nutrient density, organ meat is much higher density of nutrients than what the flesh does. Now, that's not to say go ahead and eat solely organ meat. You'll probably get a little bit too much vitamin A, a little bit too much copper. But vitamin A, we don't get from normal meat, generally speaking. And we get it from stuff like cod liver oil and organ meat. So it's important to note that, but also to start to incorporate some of these different foods that you probably ignore. As we sit down and we eat the same foods continuously each day, looking to incorporate some different types of foods. Do any of you guys actually track your micronutrients? So, have you ever used something like chronometer to actually see if you're hitting your 100% daily allowance of each individual nutrient? I would imagine not. So, like I said, we chase the macros, we chase the calories. Sometimes this can be, I wouldn't say more important, but just as, in order to strive for optimal health as well. Now, vitamin D, in terms of nutrients for muscle growth, is, except for the next one as well, is probably the most important. You can see role muscle cell proliferation, so muscle cell growth, test the actual building of testosterone, and it has really strong anti-inflammatory effects. The important thing, and there's some old research out there that actually the vitamin D that we get from supplementation does not correlate to the same quality as that we get from sunlight. So having our skin exposed to direct sunlight, and I'm not saying get yourself burnt or anything like that, but for 20 minutes every single day, especially for cardiovascular health, is far more effective. Than getting vitamin D from what your vitamin D level is. So what's important to note, so even for the guys in Oz, vitamin D is still, even if you get exposed to a lot of sunlight, you still find that a lot of people are low in vitamin D, and that can be because of an oxidative stress problem. So when the body is particularly stressed, we burn through a lot of vitamin D. So we need actually more and more exposure in certain circumstances. Anybody in the room who's got darker complexion may need more exposure to the sun in order to get adequate vitamin D status. So full body exposure, it seems to have, this goes a little bit beyond my knowledge in regards to like cell biology. Like we've got like when you think of like the status, we've got biology, we've got biochemistry, and then kind of above that, we have this another layer of physics in regards to the body, where people talk about like our body's energetic sphere and things like that. But direct exposure to sunlight seems to play a much bigger role in muscle growth than taking vitamin D just purely as a supplement. So we can try and bypass some of these things with supplementation. But I think that getting exposure to the sun is probably more effective. And what we do see now as we run genetics on a lot of different people is they have a lot of different SNPs in vitamin D. So what we're always testing is 25 hydroxy vitamin D on a blood test. It's not actually the active form. We have to take it and turn it into 120 hydroxy vitamin D or calcitriol. That is an enzymatic process that we tend to have genetic problems with. We also tend to have, a lot of people have what are called like VDR, so vitamin D receptor SNPs. So the actual receptor isn't as sensitive to vitamin D. So you have to get people to higher statuses of vitamin D in order to get the same effect. So it's slightly more complex than just taking your 5,000 IU or 2,000 IU that you take daily. But vitamin D definitely is one of those nutrients that plays a major role. Zinc is the other nutrient, right? So, like, in terms of the biggest ones with the biggest bang for your buck around muscle growth, vitamin D and zinc seem to play the biggest role. Like you see, like evidence, low zinc reduces IGF-1 and testosterone. Significantly, low zinc does. So when people talk to me about testosterone, what can I take? Because like, if you're low vitamin D, if you're low zinc, they're the first places that you can increase testosterone with, therefore increase muscle mass. Now, I don't know about you guys. I come from Ireland and we're very seafood orientated, but oysters, man, like I just can't get on board with it. But even other things, like you can use chickpeas, cashews, beef, pumpkin seeds. Again, how many of you guys are actually having seeds in your daily diet? It's probably minimal, but they do play a really big role in terms of nutrients. And then in terms of the other big one is magnesium, man. Like I spoke about ATP earlier, and ATP is, like we said, the energy currency of the body. But every single ATP needs a magnesium to stabilize it and make it to and make it work. So every time you use ATP to do something, you need a molecule of magnesium. It's one of, if not the biggest, I think it's the third most deficient nutrient currently, because we've lost the vast majority of it from our soil. And this is something that we can't chase with meat, generally speaking. So like pumpkin seeds, spinach, almonds, dark chocolate, black beans, these things tend to have high levels of magnesium. Normally something I tell people to supplement with. Not always, but normally I do. So when we look at vitamin D, zinc, magnesium, these micronutrients are very deficient in the general population. I know you guys are not general population though, right? For the most part, you concentrate on diet, but these could be some of the things, and again, genetically, some people need an awful lot more magnesium than others. And then choline, right? So this is one of the last major micronutrients that seems to pop up over and over again when you look through the literature on muscle growth. So like low levels of choline, I very much doubt any of you, unless you avoid eggs, and particularly the egg yolk, has really high levels of choline, but it creates something that's called acetylcholine. Most people think of acetylcholine as our neurotransmitter that allows us to learn and to store memory, but it's also responsible directly for muscle contraction. So low choline is a real problem. It's why people take like alpha GPC before they train, and increases muscle damage, right? So this went through the stage where everyone was just avoiding egg yolks because of the cholesterol. That's a different argument, but just eating the egg white in particular can lead to depletions in other nutrients like biotin. So having some egg yolk is really important, if you're just eating egg whites. Right. Last of the nutrients that we're going to go through, then we'll touch on some other stuff, and I'll come out of this in a second. Carnitine actually is suppressed. So this is not technically a micronutrient because it's a semi-conditional nutrient that's made up of a bunch of micronutrients. As you can see, vitamin C, B6, iron, and niacin or B3, but it's what's responsible for getting fat into the cell to burn it for fuel. But it also does loads more stuff. So actually increases testosterone receptor density. So within the muscle, it'll increase the amount of testosterone receptors so that testosterone can have more work or do more work on the muscle. We can't, I believe it's a brand new test, so I might be lying here, but we can't test receptor sensitivity for testosterone. So like you'll find people that like, they're like, oh, my testosterone's fine, but at the same time, the receptors have downregulated. So even though they may have average testosterone, it's not working well enough. Carnitine can help with this. And when you look at like the amount of nutrients that you need just to build it, it's really worth noting that carnitine is one of those nutrients that plays a big role in muscle growth. I just put in because I always feel bad when I eat lamb, so I wanted you all to feel bad. But lamb plays a major role here. So lamb, beef, pork to a lesser extent, and then we get down to dairy and plant foods. I think if you're going to try to get it from plant foods, you're going to be eating whole fields. But worth noting. Lastly, promise. Iron is a major micronutrient in terms of muscle growth, mainly because of its role in transporting oxygen around the body and producing energy. For guys, you need to be very careful of iron intake a lot more than girls do. We don't bleed every month, so we don't lose blood. Therefore, we don't lose iron. And what I tend to see more in the guys in muscle intelligence is iron overload rather than low iron. So although iron plays a role here and a really big role in muscle growth, I would definitely not advise 99% of you to supplement with iron. Iron, when there's too much of it, is extremely reactive and causes an awful lot of inflammation. So I would be very wary of supplementing with it, but a lot of you guys who eat red meat would generally be fine. I'll give you an example. There's only two people since I've been in muscle intelligence that had really low iron. One of them was because he had a bad gastrointestinal bleed. So no other reason as to why was that reason. So I wanted to put it in here because it keeps coming up in the literature, but guys, I wouldn't chase iron for the vast majority of you. Out of interest, before I continue, how many of you guys actually know, like, have had your vitamin D tested? George, Rob, Lewis, we've never done your vitamin D, have we? No, it's probably going to be the biggest micronutrient that you can leverage in terms of muscle growth. So it's definitely something that I would be looking at getting measured. If it doesn't, getting yourself from medium level vitamin D to high level vitamin D probably won't do anything. But if you're low and zinc as well at the same time, if you're low, it does play a major role. So it's definitely worth getting tested every year, every couple of years as part of a standard panel to see where your vitamin D status is. I just think that plays such a big role. Any of you guys got your genetics done? No? Chaz, you do? Who'd you do it through?
My m medical doctor, did a lot of genetic testing that I saw. He
Anything come
was
of
a
it?
concierge doctor. He did like $12,000 of testing for me, including that, and I didn't have to pay for it. It was like included as a concierge medicine, and he did a lot of that.
Yeah. Anything good come of it?
Anything good? Well, it was
Yeah,
good
as in, like, did you find out any
information.
good information?
It was good information. I had one negative one. I have the three genes were Alzheimer's, and I have one of them. And he
Oh,
was testing for
boom.
that because my grandmother had Alzheimer's, and so did my uncle. And so I know I have one of the genes, but not the. I there's three of them, I guess, and I have the least aggressive one. So. That's the only reason I say it so much. I'm trying to keep that gene at bay. I've known this for about 10 years now. And so I'd exercise just to keep fit, to sort of keep that at bay and keep well.
Yeah, APO, so it's APOE is the gene associated with Alzheimer's. It can be one of those, like if it's APOE3, which is one slightly less damaging one, high dose fish oil tends to work really, really well. Particularly DHA is worth noting in regards to that. So what you can gather from like some of that is like genetic testing can tell you nutrients that you may need to dose higher than others in regards to your overall health. So like genetics can be really, really helpful in these circumstances in order to know. Also tests like Nutrival will give you a really good breakdown of your nutrient status outside of blood tests. They can be really, really helpful. Now, when I'm thinking about somebody who could be low in something, I always like to think about it in this way: production, destruction, loss. So use magnesium as an example here. Like, are you taking in enough of it? Because like a lot of the time you find like, this is more of a female problem. Say like if a woman has heavy periods and they might turn around and say, oh, well, I eat red meat 3 times a week, but I'm still deficient in B12. That's probably a loss issue, right? So they don't have a production problem. They're eating enough. It's probably a loss problem, or don't get me wrong, it could be an absorption problem. But then you do find like people who are hyper stressed, drink a lot of caffeine, increases the breakdown and demand of stuff like magnesium. So for some of you guys who are hyper stressed in your day-to-day life, it may lead to a bigger demand for magnesium in that circumstance. So if any of you guys have ever had nutrient depletion that you've known of, if you've ever been anemic or any of those issues, think about this process: production, destruction, or loss. Where is the hole in the bucket? Okay. And then we can talk about genetics, right? So if you guys ever wanted to run genetics, it does give a really good idea of where you might be lacking or places where you may need to increase above what might be recommended in standard care. Okay, so like VDR we spoke about earlier, so vitamin D receptor, if that's low, you may need to increase vitamin D. Chaz just mentioned the ApoE gene. Like if you're ApoE4, you really need to concentrate on fish oil intake, MTHFR, folate, MTRR, B12, PEMT, choline, COMT, magnesium. It gives you good ideas of places where you can plug holes with micronutrients to improve health, therefore to improve muscle growth. So it can play a really good Can play a really big role. Now, I just wanted to put this in as an adjunct, right? Because we were talking about production before. We're talking about all those nutrients, but it's important to notice that absorption starts in the gut. If there's a digestive problem, the vast majority of your micronutrients are absorbed in the small intestine. Impaired gut function equals impaired absorption. Okay, so we can see like which is more common than you think, like low stomach acid. That's where we absorb iron, B12, calcium, and zinc, right? We can get fat malabsorption if we've ever had a gallbladder problem. If we have IBD problems, it might be an iron, folate, or magnesium, right? So looking at digestion as kind of the first stage of actually digestion, absorption, and then assimilation within the cell to actually work. So a lot of the time people are trying to force nutrients down themselves, whether that's through food or supplementation, and wondering why their status isn't getting better, when realistically it could just be a digestive problem more so than anything else. Now, this was a slightly more difficult and nuanced subject than I would normally do. I like to do it straight. One thing, I want to scare you guys. I want to talk about cardiovascular disease. I want to talk about the diseases of Western civilization. But I was informed I had to do this one. Now, I'm happy to answer any questions around any other topics or this one, or predominantly around nutrition if possible. Have any of you guys got any questions for me based on that or based on anything that you want to discuss?
Greg, Lewis here. And
Hello.
I just two things. One was for those people that do, if they do basically blood donation, iron can be a problem. I never had a problem with it in the past, but in the last 3 times that I've gone in, I've been like borderline in terms of being able to do a donation because my iron level was too low. So, and I'm eating as much meat as I ever did. I'm doing all of those things. So I'm just saying that's just one issue. The other question that I had was about magnesium. There seem to be like so many different versions of it when you talk about supplementation. Is there one that's better, or should you be doing all of them, or does it really matter?
I would say first it, no, I won't say it doesn't matter, but when you look at magnesium, it's like they're chelated to something, so they're just attached to something. So we'd like you'll see like magnesium malate, magnesium citrate, magnesium glycinate, magnesium threonate, all these different things, and they normally whatever they're chelated to will determine what effect the magnesium has. So like magnesium citrate or malate are a little bit better for like energy production, for example. Magnesium glycinate and threonate are better for sleep. So that tends to be the major thing there. And then if you look at something like magnesium oxide, it's for bowel movements, because the oxide keeps it within the stomach. So like if I ever have someone who's constipated continuously, I'll give them magnesium oxide, sometimes citrate in those circumstances to make bowel movements more consistent.
Thanks. That answered it perfectly. Thank you.
No problem.
Greg, I don't think it's really comes under a micronutrient, but probiotics. And so I've sort of been taking a Yakult, which is, like a little milk probiotic thing, and started trying to get some more fermented kefir and stuff in my diet, because I guess especially when I'm in a calorie deficit, I find like I'm probably not eating the same range of food that I normally would. So how does that play into it? And are those, does any of those things, do they really have an impact, or am I just creating expensive piss?
Probiotics are very, very effective at what they do, genuinely. So the I think the important thing to note with something like probiotics, though, is they don't colonize, right? So people often say, like, oh, I've got low bacteria in my gut, therefore I'll take probiotics. That's not what probiotics do. Probiotics tend to be better about regulating our immune system and also helping to kill off some of the non-beneficial bacteria that can accumulate within the gut. So probiotics are amazing, but they don't always do what people expect them to do. So, like, if you're looking to proliferate and grow your own bacteria, you have to feed it fiber. So you have to feed the bacteria to make it grow. And then you use stuff like probiotics to help regulate the immune system, help control some of the bad bacteria. So yeah, it's definitely worth it to chase down the probiotics.
And I guess, sorry, similar question, but proper fermented sauerkraut, kimchi, things like, are they similar?
Yeah, same thing. So they'll have the combination of both, though. So like they'll have prebiotics in the food and probiotics. So always think of prebiotics as something that feeds your bacteria. Probiotic is the actual bacteria. So yeah, I tend to advise people, especially if they have had digestive problems in the past or anything like that, is to chase down probiotic containing foods. Really beneficial.
Awesome, thank you.
No problem. Anybody else have any questions that they want to run by me?
I think Vamshi might be talking, but on mute.
Yeah. Hi, Greg. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Hey, Vamshi.
So, in the beginning, you mentioned something about the chronometer, like where you can measure the micronutrients. Is it like tracking or measuring? Like, how is it a blood test or like what is it? Can you elaborate on it?
No, so yeah, chronometer is like MyFitnessPal. That's all
Oh.
it is. So it's just way better at breaking down micronutrients than MyFitnessPal is. And it can give you a really good idea of where the gaps are in your diet. You'll be really surprised, right? So it'll give you, like, I've messed around with chronometer before. I've been like, right, I'm going to create a diet based off this calorie that gives me all the nutrients I need. Impossible. It's so hard, but it can just give you an idea of foods to rotate in and out. But then it also gives you good ideas. So like it'll say, like if you're coming really low on selenium, right? It'll be like, tomorrow, why don't you incorporate Brazil nuts to hit your selenium target? It can be really helpful. And you don't have to follow it like to chase 100% of everything, Vamshi. Like it can become a little bit obsessive in that way, but it's a really cool way to start to see where your big gaps are.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah. Thank you, Greg.
No problem, Vamshi. Good to see you. Ooh. Anybody else have anything else before we finish up?
Sorry, super branch one on last one, I promise.
Yeah.
When we spoke, you got me onto a methylated B vitamin. The first time I got it, I was got it in tablet form. The second time I had to get a refill, I couldn't get that, and they gave me a oral spray. Any efficacy of one over the other? Like, because the spray said, "Oh, leave it in your mouth for 5 seconds before you swallow." And I'm like, man, the tablet is way easier.
Yeah, I think there's an element of with the spray in it tends to be what's called like liposomal, so it comes encapsulated in, not quite encapsulated obviously, but like it gets surrounded by liposomal, like lipo, like a fat, and they put the vitamin in it, so it seems to make it slightly more absorbable. So it can have some benefit. Now, in terms of B vitamins, I've never seen any research on it. I know in certain things like glutathione, for example, which is the master antioxidant, that like if you take that normally, very little of it gets absorbed. So it has to be put inside a fat in order to allow us to absorb it. So maybe.
But yeah, poodle faking around the edges.
And like I think with some of that stuff where people are talking about delivery and like, oh, we can increase absorption by 10%, but it'll cost you extra 50% in price. I'm normally just a bit like, eh. Like we don't really know yet. So most of the time for stuff, unless it's something I'm really clear on, I just say like standard approach. We good, fellas? All right. Have a lovely Wednesday evening for most of you. Australian boys, enjoy your Thursday, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Happy humps.
Thanks, guys.